Danny is a caddy at the Bushwood Country Club. His only chance of going away to college is to win the club's caddy scholarship, but who will help him get there? Will it be Judge Smales, the owner of the club? Al Kerr, is it Kervick? Chervick? Mother.
You're going to have to edit that out.
All right, I'm going to restart.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Throwback Reviews Podcast. This is episode 17, and this week we are doing the 1980 film Caddyshack. But before we get into that, let me introduce the host. We'll go around here. Our guy that knows it all, our collector of collections, Rob Flack-O'Hara. What's going on, Rob?
What's going on, man? This is a second movie in a row that we've done that's like, it's kind of inspired me. You know, we just did The Great Outdoors. On the last one, that's really making me want to go camping before the end of summer rolls up. And now we got this great golf movie, which I want to say it makes me want to go golfing, but really wants it makes me want to learn how to golf. Actually, I don't know how to golf.
You actually want to go golfing, or you want to go to the like putt-putt?
Well, I'm a putt-putt guy, but I don't know. I feel like, you know, we just talked about this on the last show. I just turned 40. I think this is something 40-year-olds do. Like, I should learn how to golf. This should be...
You got to get some plaid pants.
Get some, right, what do they call those? Like, it's not shorts, but not...
Knickers?
Or... Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I want to see that picture on Facebook.
<I'll see it. laughs> Right, all I know from golfing, I learned from this movie and the Three Stooges. So I'm not really, I don't know if there's a, oh, and video games. I'm pretty good at golf video games.
That's where I learned how to do lots of stuff. I think I could fly a jet and drive a NASCAR now because of
what is it?
Games.
Golden tee with the ball, right?
Yeah, I bet I could do both of those things better than I could golf. I got better odds in a fighter jet.
And that other voice that you heard, this is an actual throwback episode. We got a throwback host here. Back with us is Steve Woo! Cherubino. What's going on there, Steve?
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm doing awesome.
Thanks for
happy to be on the show. It's good to be back.
Sorry, man. Yeah, thanks for stepping back in with us. Doors out this week, so you stepped up to the challenge.
Is that a bicycle accident?
I hope I could feel.
For the last episode, he talked about it. He kept falling off his bike.
I know, man. That episode was hilarious. By the way, guys, a couple great bike stories.
Yeah,
you're talking about the forts and bikes. Yeah, that
turn
was
left.
A great episode. Yeah, Dur, I mean, he got knocked unconscious a couple times, didn't he?
I'm afraid that's what happened to him this week. He could be laying somewhere.
I think Dur gets knocked out or something in every episode. he always has a story that he's getting banged up somehow. Poor guy.
I guarantee you he's been knocked out on a golf course somewhere. He could have brought that to this episode.
I'll have to ask him. He can fill us in on our next episode, whether or not he was. And so speaking of golf, and you already said you're not a golfer. How about you, Steve? Are you a golfer or are you a golfer?
No, I'm actually just like Rob. I've never been golfing for real golfing. I've been to the driving range and I've been to putt-putt mini golf. So I think between those two, I think I got the game pretty much covered.
Yeah, see, I'm not a putt-putt guy. I don't like it. I get bored. I haven't been to a driving range in years. I used to go every once in a while. I had a couple of clubs in the garage that my father gave me. That I kind of liked doing. That was fun. My in-laws are mega golfers. I mean, just golf is their life. Now they're retired, but even before retirement, they just any spare time was golf. Now it's just like, oh my gosh, golf.
Go ahead. Here's my question though: how far could you hit a golf ball? I mean. It's like hundreds of yards. I mean,
maybe 150 yards. Me personally, I don't know.
Right.
But I'm
so if you screw up, you're going to be walking 150 yards. That's like further than a football field. Well, is that right? Yeah. Yeah. Football field.
Yeah.
You screw up in putt putt. I mean, it's like 5 feet. You just scoot over a little bit, you know? So I think that the stakes are lower in putt putt. I think that's what keeps me in that arena.
Yeah. Well,
and the driving range.
Yeah, it's all right there.
Yeah, that's why I like the driving range. You can just crank them out there. Wherever they go, and you know, you don't have to clean them up. You got a guy out there driving around.
Back when I was in college in Philly, we used to hit the driving range. Like, I used to love to go there because I never went to class, so I would always try to find things to do in the meantime. And going to the driving range was one of them. And I would usually be drunk. And we went to this crappy-ass neighborhood. This is the downtown Philly. Crappy-ass neighborhood driving range, but it was so cheap. You could get like a huge bucket of golf balls for almost nothing. But this driving range was so cheap that, you know, at a driving range, they have a little car that goes around and collects all the balls. It usually has some type of mechanism on the front. This driving range had a guy with a hard hat walking around picking them up while people were hitting the ball. And you know, a bunch of us would try to hit the guy. Okay, I'm just going to say it. And I came close one time, and the guy, he came at me. He's like, what the? Blah, blah, blah. He starts yelling. And I'm like, man, I'm sorry, because it was a wicked slice right at the guy. And I suck at golf, so it was pure luck that I came close to him. And he comes running up to me, and he's like, you know, he's like, I've been shot 7 times. And then he's like going all of these, and he starts showing me all these bullet wounds and stuff. And I'm sitting, I'm thinking to myself, well, then what do you care if you get hit with a golf ball, bud? You know, you've been through worse. But it was pretty crazy place.
Yeah, the one around here has a, it's like a mini Jeep or something, all caged in. And they kind of go around and scoops them all up, but, I've been golfing actual like on a course twice. Once was with my in-laws and was not enjoyable. Actually, it was my father-in-law and my brother-in-law. And it not because I was with him, but it was like it was in the middle of summer. It was like August afternoon. It was hot. They didn't want to get a golf cart. They wanted to walk. And I'm not into walking in the sun like that, carrying a bag. And I sucked. So I was walking all over the place. So that time sucked, but another time that I went, when I used to work a really weird midnight shift, I would work weekends and all midnights, and we had a really cool boss. And one time he said, look, we're all going to get together at this state park and we're going to play 9 holes. And so a bunch of us guys just met up. It was like a Wednesday in the morning, you know, we were off during the week, and he set up like different rules for each hole, you know, just dumb rules. And we basically just got totally torqued, you know, with my boss. And it was really cool. You know, it's like his way of being like, look, because he'd been working there for years. He's retired and gone. But, you know, basically like, yeah, this shift sucks. Let's have fun during the week one time as a group. And it was cool because when we went back to work that week, he pulled everybody in the office that he wanted to have a meeting. And he starts giving out awards for like the guy that was these two guys that were so drunk that they were driving their golf cart into crap. He like brought them a toilet seat as a reward because they're so blitzed. And that was the only time that I actually enjoyed it. I'll never do it again. It's just not for me.
Never.
I'm not into the game of golf.
Now I'll throw this out. I have a golf cart.
Of course.
What do you use it for?
You know what? At our old house, I was like, the mailbox was really far away. And I just ran across this thing for sale one time, and I was like, I need a golf cart, you know, like something to drive around the neighborhood. All my neighbors hate me anyway. So, and I went on eBay, and you can order flames. Well, like flames, but they're magnets, you know. So I have these giant flames all over it, and then on the front I got a giant mustache. That's I drive around. My neighbors hate me so much. It's so awesome. No,
why, they're not loud or anything.
You know, and my next door neighbor, he mows every other day. And he's that guy, you know. Right. So it's like my yard, like it doesn't look bad enough, but next to his looks like a golf green, you know, like a putting green. So then I drive by on the golf cart, and I know he's thinking, like, you know what, dude, you could be mowing. But I go cruise around. Me and the kids go ride. So, but maybe someday I'll if I ever take up golfing, I'm set. I already got the golf cart.
You throw on your knickers and drive around.
I'm ready. I'm ready.
Well, why don't we get into this, Rob? Why don't you give us our little summary of Caddyshack?
All right. So, I told you guys before we started that my wife's out of town this week. I've been helping the kids, you know, and my son in English, they're writing haikus. So I wrote you a haiku. summary of the movie. All right, 575. I learned all this. I had to relearn it this week. You ready?
Oh, man.
Danny's a caddy. No scholarship, no college. And there's a gopher. There you go. There's my Caddyshack haiku. I actually did write a wrote you up a serious summary. Danny is a caddy at the Bushwood Country Club. His only chance of going away to college is to win the club's caddy scholarship, but who will help him get there? Will it be Judge Smales, the owner of the club, Al Chervik, an eccentric millionaire, or Ty Webb, the charming and aloof golfer? Or will Carl Spackler destroy the whole golf course first while chasing a pesky gopher in this classic golf film from 1980, Caddyshack?
Very good.
Well done.
Very good. I like the haiku.
It would have taken me three. It would have taken me about three or five tries to get through that. Yep. He nailed it in the first try.
Yeah. He's a professional.
That's what I do. Professional. That's what I make the small bucks for.
Yeah, that was a good summary, Rob. So, I mean, this obviously has some big name actors, right? We got Chevy Chase, Rodney Dangerfield, Ted Knight, Michael O'Keefe, who played Danny Noonan. He looked really familiar other than this, but I don't know. Do you guys remember him from anything after this?
You know, I kept thinking I did, and I'm like, you know, I think he looks like, I don't know, maybe he just got that face that looks really familiar, you know? But I went back, I looked through all his IMDb stuff. I didn't see anything. He looked like a young Michael Keaton to me.
With lighter hair?
I don't really see it.
I said to me.
Well, not to me.
Maybe it's the hair.
He did have a soft way of saying things, too, that seemed familiar. The way he would, like, basically his insults were very, like, soft-spoken but, like, hard-hitting. And that seemed familiar, but I don't know him from anywhere else.
I liked his acting in this movie. I know it's kind of a throwback to Steve when you were on, and we would get into this with Dore about acting more so with kids. But being a guy that's not like a super well-known actor, we haven't seen anything really from him afterwards that we know of. I thought he was great. He was, you know, that sarcasm that he had, very subtle, but to the point to where he would totally piss off Tony. I forget his last name, but the other caddy. But
who smoked? Who had a cigarette?
Yeah, carrying two golf bags, smoking a cigarette for the old couple. But yeah, I thought he was great in this movie. There was something I didn't get here. Another one of the actors, the actress that played his girlfriend or his shag friend, I guess you'd say, one of his friends, Maggie. What was with the Irish accent? That was horrible.
I wondered the whole time. I mean, there was no, it didn't add anything to the story, and it was terrible.
It was like, it did not add anything. And I'm like, okay, is this, she can't really be Irish. No, I looked it up, and she's like born in like Boston or something.
I wondered, you know how sometimes actors, like they'll bring something to the role, you know? And I thought maybe for some reason she was like, I mean, maybe she was the one that pushed it, you know, like, well, I think this person should be Irish, or so. I didn't get it the whole time. You know, I kept waiting for a payoff at some point.
Man, I'm an idiot. I didn't even know it was a fake accent. I had no clue.
My wife and I would always joke around when she's, you know, like the one part she's like, "Thanks for nothing." Like, that's just kind of one of our things we'll say to each other when we're kind of maybe a little pissed off at each other.
I thought that sounded more authentic. I thought you're like just now.
Yeah. So that kind of bothered me. But I mean, overall, I thought when we said we're going to do this movie, I hadn't seen it in quite some time. And when I first started watching it, I was like, because the beginning, which I want to comment on the beginning, actually, the opening scene, again, Steve, it reminds me of how we talked about, I think it was on My Bodyguard, where we talked about the opening sequences to music, you know, like a long intro. And it was kind of like My Bodyguard, where he riding his bike around the neighborhood. So I was thinking of you. I was like, all right, here's another one of the, you know, earlier 80s movies that still, you know, that had that intro instead of just jumping right into the movie.
Yeah. And I think, I guess riding a bike in intros, that must have been big in the 80s. And now that you mention it, it's the second yeah. movie we've done with that.
Very popular pastime.
And he kind of had a My Bodyguard-ish look, that kid. I forget his name, but Michael something or other. But,
Keaton?
No. I can't think of the kid's name from My Bodyguard. But he's the same kind of afro-y, frizzy 80s hair. And so, and then we have Bill Murray in this movie, which I thought, again, he was awesome in this movie. He was one of my, actually him and Chevy Chase, I thought were great in this movie. Because we, the three of us did another Chevy Chase movie with the little people. What was the name? Under the Rainbow?
Under the Rainbow, yeah.
I thought his acting in this movie was better. Right, I liked him better in this role than that movie. Ted Knight, awesome. For me personally, I guess the only one I wasn't super impressed with, but I'll catch crap for this, but Rodney Dangerfield, I just never really was a big Rodney fan.
The whole movie, I just thought, this is Rodney Dangerfield. Like, it's not him being a character. I mean, it's his stand-up act, you know, the whole movie. I mean, it's just him throwing out one-liners and doing his shtick, you know? So I didn't think of it as that character. I just thought of it as, you know, a bunch of people at a golf course and Rodney Dangerfield's there.
Right.
Yeah. I'm kind of the same way. I mean, anything he's in, it's going to kind of come off a little fake because nobody really acts like that. And it's like he doesn't fit kind of like anywhere in real, like if anybody's trying to portray reality. So, but for some reason, his one-liners made me laugh. I mean, I'm not a huge fan of his. Like, I liked him in Back to School a lot, actually. But in this movie, like, his one-liners were like just – it was total stand-up comedy act, but – his delivery was good, man.
His wife must have been hot before electricity. That got me. I like that one.
That was great.
Yeah, he did have some good stuff. Yeah, it's not that I don't like him. I just he did have funny parts, and that's kind of like we have some character versus. I mean, we had Judge Smales versus Al Chervik. That pairing was great. I mean, the character of Al just totally getting under the judge's skin was great. And his reactions to him, I mean, that he was getting so upset. I mean, Ted Knight just played that great. I mean, that whole dynamic between those two, I think, just perfectly matched up.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, he was super pissed.
Yeah, it looked very genuine when he would get upset from the beginning, where he's like, come on, what do you call him, Whitey or something, because his white hair after he nails him about that hat.
Well, you know, yeah, one of the things that I read online was that Ted Knight was actually mad during most of the filming of this movie because being an old school type actor, he was expecting a tight script, wanting to follow, you know, all the pre-written lines, and you brought in basically an entire, you know, everybody that's in this was stand-up comedy. You know, you've got Chevy Chase and Bill Murray with Saturday Night Live and their stand-up history. You've got Rodney Dangerfield. And so there was so much ad-libbing and riffing going on. So he was actually mad at a lot of the scenes. And so, but, and I don't know, you know, if he channeled that into some of those scenes or if he was legitimately upset by some of it, you know, but yeah, I thought, especially those two, because they're such polar opposites.
It would seem like he would. I mean, I would not be surprised if he was genuinely mad, because his face was like red and everything. So,
yeah, I mean, yeah, I can see how that would be too. I mean, if you're used to acting a certain way, and I mean, he was just kind of popping. Yeah. And he's just here popping out one liners and his, you know, and Rodney's facial expressions, yeah, I could see how that could maybe be bothersome to a guy that's got the old method of
old
acting.
Old school, yeah, sure.
But it was great. I love that matchup. It was really good, really funny. But I like Ted Knight. I like how he gets that frantic, his hair and all the you know, facial expressions he made or sound effects to, like, Danny was like, like just stuff like that. I love when he does that stuff, man.
Really?
It cracks me up.
I'm the Chevy Chase fan, man. I would look forward to every part with him because he knew he's just hilarious. I love his delivery. I'm a huge, I mean, I don't like seek out his movies now, but if Chevy Chase is in a movie, I look forward to watching it. You know what I mean? And I love his delivery. And, you know, in the very beginning when he's like, yeah, this isn't Russia. Is this Russia? This isn't Russia. Yeah. Is it? I love stuff like that.
I mean,
that
I like kind the, of under his breath. For me, the epitome of that delivery was Fletch, the Fletch movies with Chevy Chase. I mean, I love the way that he does that, where it's almost like you get the feeling like he's improvising, you know, but he's saying these funny things or whatever. But now in this movie, this is actually, you know, there was a very public feud between Bill Murray and Chevy Chase. You know, they both got started on Saturday Night Live. Chevy Chase left Saturday Night Live, and pretty much the entire staff of Saturday Night Live had hard feelings that he had left to go into movies or whatever. And during the second season, Chevy Chase came back, and so everybody pretty much told Bill Murray to go back and confront him. And they, according to both sides, they did get into a physical altercation backstage, and words were exchanged or whatever. So it's very – so when I was watching this movie, there's that added tension when they have the scene where they're together, where they go into the cabin, you know, because you know these two guys really didn't like each other. And I searched all the way through IMDb. I couldn't find anything. I think this is the only movie that both of them appear in, which is weird because you have all those Saturday Night Live type movies where they throw people in, you know, and do all that kind of stuff. And not even – I guess Bill Murray didn't return to – along with everybody else, except for Chevy Chase, didn't return to Caddyshack 2.
That's interesting. I didn't hear about that. I never knew about that.
Oh, yeah. There's a great – I'll send you a link if you want to put this in the show notes. There's a great book. It's called Live from New York, I think, and it's like a 400-page book of behind-the-scenes stories from Saturday Night Live. And it's great.
It's probably hardcore.
You know, I mean, it's like – it has all these people scheduled, like, you know, we show up on Monday, we start doing coke, you know, we go to sleep on Thursday, you know, I mean, they're trying to put this show together every week. There's a lot of crazy stories in there, but yeah, that's well covered in that book. So, and that scene, you know, you're talking about, putting, you know, different characters against each other. That was one in real life that, when we were watching, I thought of.
Now they only had the one scene together in this, right? Towards the end, right after they announced they're going to have this competition, that team golf competition.
Yeah, that's the only scene that they're both in. Yeah,
it probably was tough for Bill Murray because in that scene, Bill Murray had to act like he really wanted to be Ty Webb's friend, and Chevy Chase was like brushing him off. So yeah, it's probably a tougher scene for Bill Murray.
Yeah, that was good. So funny. And speaking of Bill Murray, his little feud going with that gopher. Again, Bill Murray, this part, I thought it was awesome. And all I could think of is how hard it had to be to concentrate on the way he would have his like bottom lip cranked over to the left the whole time he was talking. Like how many times did he like go to do a take and then they'd be like, oh, Bill, sorry, the lip, you got to sag the lip. Because he just did it. Right. He did it perfect, like he was just some moron.
Well, you know, professionals like Bill Murray and myself, we get things right on the first take.
On the first take.
It always happens, right? So we never go back and fix things.
I would also wonder in the movie how much was ad lib of him trying to kill that gopher, like, and the things he was saying, like calling him like varmint Kong, like the Viet Cong, and like making that gun and all that stuff. I mean, it was really good.
What did he say? He had a license to kill from the government of the United Nations.
Right. The scene where he is talking about the Cinderella story and he's teeing off on the flowers. It said that was basically entirely ad-libbed. That they just gave him. He said he wanted four rows of flowers and a putter or a driver or whatever he had in that scene, and that he would just talk, you know. And so, and actually. I watched this and I watched it again with the commentary track. And one of the things that, that they said was the original cut when they were done of this film was like 4.5 hours long. And because originally it was much more about the caddies and their quest, you know, to get this scholarship and the conflict between the caddies. But what happened is you have all these veteran improv actors that kept one upping each other and being funnier and funnier. And so that ended up, you know, making its way into the final cut. So, every time they would go out, they would just try to be funnier than the next guy and get a little bit more scene time.
Can I say something now? Because this, it might be a little off tangent. This is what you said makes perfect sense to me. And this is kind of why I didn't like the movie as much as I thought I would. I was going to say later, but I'll say now, it seemed disjointed, this movie. It really did. Like, it was one little scene after the other, and you didn't get enough of each flavor of each character to really connect with them. And it must be because of what you said, Rob, because it just right. didn't cohese as much as I would have liked.
I mean, any of these people can carry a movie. Like, we just mentioned Fletch. I mean, Fletch is Chevy Chase in this wacky adventure. You mentioned Back to School, Rodney Dangerfield. I mean, that is his movie. Bill Murray, you know, any of these guys. So by throwing them all in the pot, you just get these little tiny scenes, you know, of them being funny or whatever. It's almost like it's too much. But it was, you know, this was that kind of before that. Maybe they hadn't perfected that formula yet, you know what I mean, of these types of comedies where, like Vacation, where, okay, you have Chevy Chase and, you know, you hang the movie off of that character in this adventure, and then you have those little things that happen along the way. But I don't know. I agree with you. It's almost too much going on because there's so many strong people in this film.
Yeah, I'm like that. And the way they would have to hang this movie is off mm-hmm. the caddies, and they weren't stars.
Yeah, so they're obviously not going to
tough. Probably tough movie,
you
know, to make.
Outshine when you bring in people like Chevy Chase and Bill Murray or whatever.
Well,
Sean, we got you off track. You were talking about characters. What about those two caddies?
Well, I was trying to think. Okay, so you've got this conflict between these two guys. You got the guy who seems like he's trying to do things. Well, he's not trying to do things, right? He's just trying to – he's not sugarcoating it, that he's an ass kisser to get what he needs. You know, and then you have Tony who – I don't. He seems to be a guy. He thinks he's going to get everywhere on his looks, or something. You know, like he's a cool guy. And I think it's like him, his brother, and was the little girl. Was that supposed to be his sister as well? I think that wore a ball cap all the time.
Oh, maybe. You know what? It's funny because when you guys did My Bodyguard, this guy totally reminded me of Matt Dillon from My Bodyguard. Remember how he had his hair all slicked back and those big like the aviator type glasses and stuff? That's what he looked like to me.
Yeah, but we never got that awesome fight scene that we got.
Yeah, they teased it. They teased it a few times.
Yeah, but you know, it was like they had like this relationship where like he wanted to kick his ass, but then next thing you know, they're kind of just like they're okay, but they're a little edgy with each other. You know, when they see like Maggie at the pool and he's like, "How was it?" So I'm thinking, okay, my memory of this movie was that Danny and Maggie were an actual locked in couple, but it seems like it's more like they're just like, this is their summer job, their summer fling. He doesn't really hide the fact that he's got that everybody has a thing for, Lacey.
Right. Right. Now, and I got to mention this on Lacey. When I saw her, I thought she looked familiar, but I couldn't place it. So I went to IMDb and this blew my mind that, Lacey was played by Cindy Morgan, who was also Laura or Yori in Tron. And I did not put that together. And let me tell you this.
Wow.
See, I would have been 7 when this film originally came out. So I did not see Caddyshack, you know, when it originally came out. But I did see Tron. And if I had known when watching Tron that 2 years before that, I could see a movie where she was going to have her top off. That would have blown my little 9-year-old mind, I'm afraid.
Yeah, I didn't make the connection until yesterday when I was looking up on IMDb some stuff, and I was like, really? Didn't make that connection either. She looked real good, though.
Mm-hmm. I'll
tell you that, man. That scene when they first meet her for the first time. Whoa.
That's
yeah,
a little
and
golf
no bra,
right?
Obviously.
Right. Now, let me ask you this. If you have a chance... And it could be then, it could be now, either way. To meet this lady in real life, do you want her in that golf outfit or you want her in the Tron outfit?
It's a tough one.
Yeah, I'm going to go with golf.
I would say Tron except for the helmet. The helmet's kind of a – if she didn't have to wear the Tron helmet, I would say the Tron suit. But
yeah, I think you got to take the whole thing. You can't take pieces. Like, you can't do part Tron and then there's like the golf screen. Yeah,
not a mix and match. All right.
There's rules.
Well, then I cheat and I go with the bathing suit scene at the pool.
Yeah. You know, speaking of the bathing suit pool scene, and let's just do the whole pool scene, but that starts off that pool scene. I'm watching it and I'm like, man, they did a horrible job of editing that, where she walks up, climbs up the ladder, then she starts walking, and there's a guy at the edge. He falls off. She smirks, her little, you know, smirk, and goes to jump and dive off, and just the editing to switch to somebody else was so bad. Like, they could have just left out the part where the guy's on the ladder, showed her climbing up, and then maybe had somebody else. You know what I'm talking about, Steve? Did you notice that as well?
Totally. Well, the actual person who did the stunt diving was much thinner. It's like, it was almost as bad as whatever that movie was where the stuntman had was a woman, and then they had a mustache in the next scene. I can't remember what that was.
I'm going to get you,
one
sucker.
Of those slapstick movies.
Yeah. And the backflip or whatever. The guy's got the mustache, yeah.
Yeah.
So this is weird. On IMDb, it says that Cindy Morgan, and that's who played Lacey, is legally blind. Yeah.
What?
So, and there's a whole little thing in the trivia here that says that she climbed up the diving board. You know, when they make movies now, when you have your insurance or whatever, you're not going to let a blind person climb a high dive and stand up on a, I mean, obviously, you know, like you said, there is that cut to the stunt diver or whoever that is, but this almost seems like it can't be right.
Well,
that's what it
she
says.
She was legally blind in that movie?
It could just mean like,
get out of here.
I don't know what it can mean.
I know you could still see
and
still be qualified as legally blind.
Yeah, maybe it's like the depth perception.
Maybe.
Is, you know, I don't know.
Interesting.
I didn't dig in that far.
Right. I'd still take her. Vision impairment or not, I'm still with her.
There was a couple stunt scenes in this movie where it was actually the real act. Like when Danny climbed out the window of the house in the very beginning and slid down the pole, that would have been a stunt actor in today's movies.
Definitely. But yeah, I noticed that, and I was just like, oh man, and I'm like, Cherubino's definitely gotta catch that one. He's the audio and video guy, so I thought for sure you would catch that. But this whole scene, like, I didn't see this movie, Rob, like you were saying, as a kid. But I knew this scene as a kid. Like, We all knew it.
Me too.
This was the baby Ruth in the pool. But that's Duty. All I remember. I don't know if we saw just a cut scene of that when I was a kid or something, or just I remember that blatantly the duty scene. But I didn't remember that there was topless chicks in there.
No.
You know,
I would have watched it a lot sooner.
That's right. Yeah.
You should have told me. No, I think
it was definitely a scene we all knew.
Yeah, I almost wonder if it was in a trailer or something, because I definitely remember seeing that scene, even though I'm sure I wasn't allowed to watch this movie as a kid.
I'm pretty sure it was like the edited for TV version.
Yeah, so. You're right. It could be something like that. It was definitely, that's a funny scene when the grandmother sees Lacey, or it would be her aunt, and Tony's got his, you know, she's all kicking back, and she just smirks like she's just like that rich girl, you know, from New York City, doesn't want to be there, and is just gonna act up, be with all these guys just to tick off her family. And they're like, okay,
yeah,
bring it on. They're all trying to like fight over who's gonna get her. But yeah, that scene was definitely a good scene. That was kind of like crazy how they all just jump over, start raiding like the whole pool scene.
Right. There's that sign that says caddies welcome. And it's like, what, from like 1 p.m. to 1:15 or something? It's like just a little.
Yeah. 15 minutes. That was great. And the baby Ruth was the perfect duty, because as the water was wearing away at it, you'd see like the peanuts were coming out.
Yeah. And then, that's the other part of the scene. I just remember a kid yelling duty, and then Bill Murray just saying, it's all right, eating it. And
right. I know that's a weird thing too, that when he takes that bite out of it, because I don't know. I wouldn't eat a candy bar. I mean, even if I knew it was a candy bar that'd been floating in a pool, it's such a, but it's totally his character, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Plus, it was scraping along the bottom.
He's squeegeeing it across the pool. He's like, got it. Yeah. I thought the same thing. I'm like, even if I knew it was a candy bar.
Yeah.
Not eating it. Not going to happen. But, that was a good scene. And one of the other scenes I really liked, and he played a great part in it again, Bill Murray, was later on in the movie because with Al and the judge, there's that conflict going on, because basically Al wants to buy the land. The judge thinks he's trying to become a member. And, you know, Al's got all this money, but he wants to develop because he's developing across the way, which is driving these gophers in. That's driving everyone mad. And that's Bill Murray's job, is to get these gophers out. But towards the middle-ish, the end, when the bishop comes walking up, it was actually, I think it's right at the end of the Cinderella story, mm-hmm. isn't it?
Yeah, it's right around there.
And he walks up and says he wants to get a quick nine. And that scene, I thought was great, because he kept doing that, like looking at the camera and just like looking at the audience like, really? Even this guy that like has no brain really to him, he's just like looking at it and egging on the bishop. Oh, yeah, the rain's fine. It's storming. I like that scene a lot. I thought that scene was funny. Trying to make it like serious with the music, and this old bishop guy's having such a great time until he misses a putt and everything else is going in because of like a frog or the wind or whatever. And then he gets I thought he got struck down and died the way he just left them. Yeah, I didn't remember later, you know, when I watched it earlier in my earlier years, that he was actually still alive at the end of the movie when they were having their meeting in the judge's office.
Yeah. I almost wonder if that's like a ratings thing, like if he had been struck and killed. You know, but if they say, well, he came back so he didn't really get killed or something like that, then I don't know. Sometimes they do stuff like that when they're editing, you know, just to avoid. Although, is this rated R? I assume it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it has to be.
Because there was something recently that we reviewed that shocked me that was PG. But yeah, this has to be with the female and the male nudity. When the guy.
Oh, the. His butt?
No. When the guy jumps out of the pool.
He wasn't completely...
Whitey's,
I think.
He's wearing like a jock strap or something, which I was like, why is he in the pool with a jock strap?
Yeah.
I need a bigger monitor then. thank goodness, though. But yeah, you do see... I don't know. There's a lot... what Steve said about... remembering the cable version. I think that's what I remembered was the you know, cut for TV version of this. So when I started watching this week, I was like, you know, my 11-year-old, he could probably watch this. And then he went off and did something else, you know. So he didn't end up watching it. And thank goodness, because I
Right.
Yeah, I didn't even attempt this one, although my daughter came in tonight when I was just skimming through some stuff, and it was when the gopher was coming through his tunnels, and I paused, and she's like, oh, what do you want? No, you can't watch
I
this.
Know, it does look like a kid thing, you know?
Yeah. So I'm like, I'm going to pause it till you get what you need, and then I'll resume it. It's just not a kid movie, even though it looks like a little fuzzy.
But the gopher... Yeah, well, the gopher was very childish. I mean, every gopher scene...
Slapstick kind of thing, okay, you know, like almost like a roadrunner, you know, Wile E. Coyote type thing where, you know, he's going to get away and Bill Murray's going to chase him or whatever.
Yeah, and even those scenes, I thought for some reason that the scenes between him and the gopher were... I thought there was more scenes and longer scenes parts of that, but they were pretty quick, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I thought so, too, before I watched it. I thought there was like this huge like war going on between them, and there was, but I thought there would be more content too.
Yeah, and there's a character that we didn't even talk about that he was actually probably my favorite character was Spalding. I love that kid, man. He was so funny. The grandson.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, swearing, but not even really swearing on the course, and you could just tell the judge was just like disappointed that was his grandson. You know, he's like, get your clothes on, change, you're gonna play golf. He's like, I'm not playing golf, I'm playing tennis. He's like, you don't play golf. And
the line that cracked me up is when he walks up to the snack bar and he's like, because he's like a rich little spoiled kid, you know, he's like, I want a hamburger and a cheeseburger. He has that whole list and he says, you'll get nothing and like it. And there were several lines like that I wonder in retrospect if this is where they came from, because I remember hearing stuff like that. But, you know, there was one. Oh, when Chevy Chase says, well, thank you very little or whatever. I hear people say that all the time, you know, but now I'm looking back and I can't find anybody that said that before this movie. So I don't know if this is, you know, what made those popular, I guess.
Yeah, my friends used to say, well, I have that going for me. Like when Bill Murray was caddying for the Dalai Lama.
yeah, exactly. So, whatever he goes.
I like when Spalding asked the girl at the restaurant if she was going to eat the fat off of her plate from the steak.
you know, this movie, if you go and look, it was voted one of the top. It's like one of the top 10 sports films. It's one of the top 50 comedies. And overall, I mean, the plot itself is not funny, but it's those little tiny zingers that are in there. The lines from Rodney Dangerfield, the little, like, are you going to eat the fat off that plate? That's funny. You know, there's a scene, and Sean, maybe you want to talk about this scene where Danny gets caught with Lacey. But as that's going on, the judge's wife is in the shower and she hollers out, "Will you come loofah my stretch marks?"
Yeah. And he's trying to like deepen his voice like the judge, and then she opens the door and sees him, acts really shocked at first, but then she's like, I don't know, maybe this young guy here as the door's being chopped away and like in a shining type manner.
Right.
With an iron.
I literally had to pause it and watch that again. "Will you loofah my stretch marks?"
I didn't hear what she said. I thought she said something in German.
Yeah, I didn't know what she said either until Rob wrote it in the notes. I was like, that's what she said. I know exactly what he's talking about now.
Crack me up. So they're just those little – I mean, that's a – as far as the actual movie, the plot goes, she doesn't need to say anything. I mean, she's in the shower. It could have been a throwaway, you know, "Is that you?" or whatever, you know. But no, they get in, "Will you loofah my stretch marks?" It's one more thing.
Yeah. There was a lot of there was a lot of scenes like that, like these unnecessary humor that would totally out of place. Like, and there were some really bad jokes too. Like when the old couple went into the judge's house for tea, and judge pushed the waiter, and all the tea from the second floor just come down flying down the steps, and they're like, "That must be the tea."
Yeah.
That's a terrible joke.
Or even the part with Maggie when she's like saying she thinks she's pregnant, she's late. Like that whole. There was not that romantic relationship with them. Like, I don't know. I just didn't think that was needed. That was one of those scenes that could have been cut out. And then her jumping around the green, and he happens to be standing out there towards the end of the movie when she finds out she's not pregnant.
Right. Some of those scenes, and knowing or reading or hearing that about that it was cut down from 4.5 hours or whatever to, I mean, this is just over an hour and a half. It seemed longer than it was. I think it's 98 minutes is what it's listed at. But there are scenes like that where you can imagine, okay, this whole pregnancy thing, that might have been a 15-minute subplot or something that took off that's now cut down to, I mean, it feels like you're just touching on some of those little things.
Yeah. That's what took – I didn't like that about the movie as much. Like, they could have made it a more cohesive – even if some of the funnier scenes weren't in there, like if – I'm into like the characters and the plot and just like a good story, and anything that takes me out of that, I just give negative points to. And even though the other scenes were hilarious, I would have rather seen a better story in the movie.
What about like the scene like when Rodney Dangerfield's character is playing the music on the, you know, on the course, and he's doing that wacky dancing, which I think he does a couple times in the movie, maybe three times. I mean, it got across. I thought Ted Knight's reaction was better than what caused it, that scene that caused it. Like, I thought I think they could have done something differently to get that reaction still. It was a little over the top, like this little tiny car stereo inside of a golf bag is like blaring that loud, and they're all dancing around him and Wang.
They're all like completely dancing like crazy people. Yeah, I know. I agree.
Yeah,
that was definitely over the top. His whole golf bag was over the top.
Yeah.
Had a beer
and
tap
and
in
shooting
it.
Shooting clubs out.
Right. And then that, what was that one club? It was like a telescope, the one that he said he got from Einstein or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. I think those are definitely little scenes, like you said, that probably could have been left out that weren't necessarily needed to make this movie funny. Because I really thought this movie was funny. And I'll be honest, like I said before, I was a little like, hesitant about this one. Just because I didn't remember it being this funny.
If it wasn't for the Chevy Chase scenes, I would have liked this movie much less. I know there wasn't that many, but...
You're right. He was great.
Like his whole character.
His character was great. Just playing that very just loose, but smarty, smart alecky kind of guy. He did. I like I said, I liked him way better in this than I did Under the Rainbow.
Well, and Chevy Chase, I think there are some movies that he can carry, but a lot of times, especially when he's having to do like a character like that, it gets to be so over the top that little doses of him, I think, are better than a long stretch, you know?
Right.
Yeah, like when Lacey was there and he was singing at the piano and he's like showing her how to do like a shot and he just throws it over his shoulder and he starts singing to it. Like, that was funny.
Yeah, he was like, he's a strange character in this. He was like super clueless, yet he was good with the chicks, but really not, kind of. Like, it was interesting.
His stuff had been a lot of just ad-libbing. I don't know how you could write the way he was saying things. Yeah, the way he was acting.
The way he was acting, yeah.
You know, he's this rich guy. Because his father was one of the founders, along with the judge, correct? That founded this golf club.
Yeah, we found out later.
So he's basically just living off of that. Because he said something about back in Vietnam. I didn't catch what he said either when he was talking to Lacey. He's like, oh, I got it back in the war. And she's like, oh, you're in Vietnam. And he said something. I didn't catch what his catch line was to that.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, he said he wasn't in. Either. I don't remember.
Well, it's not a big deal, but that was a funny scene. Another one, the whole ending scene, basically, that when they finally get, because on this course, you're not allowed to bet. There's no money exchange, no bets allowed at this club, even though Al tries to do it in the very beginning, which is what sets off Smales, mm-hmm. is which he calls him Smales, I believe. He calls him Smales every time he sees him. But that ending was, I liked the ending. I thought it was played out well, the end scene. But even just the buildup, you know, when Chevy Chase and the judge were like having their little talk and he wants him to side with the judge. And I think he's finally just like, man, Dad didn't even like you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And yeah. I tell you, another part that just cracked me up was in that end where they're having the big celebration or whatever, you know, and then Al, Rodney Dangerfield's character, shouts out, we're all going to get laid. Yeah. Like, what is that? I don't even know where that came from. You know, like, what does that have to do with anything?
I know. That must have come from a cutscene somewhere.
Another bet or something that happened that we didn't hear about. But I thought...
I guess it kind of could apply, but...
I thought tomorrow at work, you know, the first thing that goes right, that's what I'm shouting out. we patch all the servers tomorrow. I'm gonna be like, all right, we're all gonna get laid and just see what everybody says. So
that's a great idea.
That probably wouldn't go over too well, depending on who's your office.
Make
sure you film it,
put it on Instagram or something, or that video you use, Vimeo or whatever it is.
Oh yeah,
Vine. Yeah. Yeah, you put it on your Vine.
I'm making my ringtone every time I get an email.
I'm going to totally use that more. Anytime I have any kind of win whatsoever in life, I'm just going to scream it out. Oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah, so we covered a lot of the quotes that were in there. There were some definitely some good quotes in this movie, but you know, like you guys said, it is kind of one of. I think we even had this the last episode, Rob, where it was like it's kind of hard to mm-hmm. review it as a storied movie because it's there's a story behind it, mm-hmm. but it's just little different scenes of.
I think it comes from, and the writers on this were you got Harold Ramis, who is also the director, but you also have Bill Murray's brother Brian Doyle Murray. Who was a writer on Saturday Night Live, and you have all these people that have done stand-up comedy. And I think that's what you get. What's the best way to say it? I don't think they had perfected the formula yet for a comedy type film. I think what they were doing was taking funny things, funny little stories, you know, just like The Great Outdoors, just like, you know, several of these movies that we've seen, and they just took a bunch of funny things and strung it together. I mean, this took place on a golf course, but it could have been a tennis resort. It could have been whatever. It didn't matter that it was, you know, the story itself didn't matter that it was on a golf course. You know, it was just a place where you hung these funny little characters and funny little skits.
Yeah, and tied it all together. Mm-hmm. In The Great Outdoors, that's exactly, we talked about this on that episode, and that was 1989, right? 88, 89.
Yeah, 88,
So I guess they never got the formula right in the 80s for that.
I still don't think they got the formula right. There's so many movies that come out now that are like, have just, as many blockbuster stars as they could fit into them that just suck. In fact, those are
And those are the movies that you see the previews and you go, okay, that's going to be funny. But you've learned over the years that you're getting fooled because they're showing you all the funny parts. Mm-hmm. All the in-between stuff are those little fluffer scenes that they try to make funny or do funny things that are just kind of like, it doesn't really tie things together.
I know. I was looking at Rotten Tomatoes because I wanted to watch a movie or rent a movie. And I came across, I don't even know the whole name. I think it's 48 something. It's a movie that kind of just came out. 48 events, 48 dates. I don't even know. But it's like tons of like cameo appearances and all these stars in the movie. And I was reading some of the Rotten Tomato reviews because it just got slammed. And one reviewer said, I've been reviewing movies for 20 years. I can't think of one right now that's worse than this movie. You know what I mean? But it had all these stars in it. So it's definitely not the secret formula.
That's a movie that just came out recently, you said?
Yeah, it's like 48 something, I think. It's a number and then something. I can't remember the entire movie name.
I'm not a big, like, go out to the movie guy. Are you guys, like, do you like to go out to the movies a lot, or Steve?
The only time I go out to a movie is when my brother, who really likes movies, will be like, do you want to see this next weekend? I go, sure. If it wasn't for him, I would probably never go to the theater.
I got two things working against me. Number one, I'm so ADD that all it takes is one cell phone going off or somebody with the light on their phone or a kid kicking my chair or whatever. And it immediately takes me out of the movie. And all of a sudden I'm like, kid kicking a chair, kid kicking a chair. You know, that's all I could think about it. It totally sucks me out of the movie. You know, the other thing is, I've got two little kids. So, I mean, I used to love going to the movies. Me and my buddies would go to movies anytime there was that was like a normal, we have two movie theaters here just in my town that are both like that $5 Friday night type thing, you know? And so, yeah, you'd go spend $5. But, you know, over the years, what I found is when you have a movie that's $5 to get in, it's a really good babysitting service. And that's what people do. You know, they take their kids, they drop them off at the theater, and it's kids, you know, being loud and running around and stuff. So honestly, I just bought a really good, like a giant TV and a good surround sound stuff. And that's what I do now, you know, it doesn't take that long these days for movies to come out on Netflix or Blu-ray. Or, I mean, if it's a month or 2 months, I guess I'm past that point where I have to see it the day it comes out, you know, and I'd much rather just see it at the house. You know, now I got big, nice, you know, leather chair or whatever, and I don't have anybody kicking it. And, you know, if the kids are being loud, I tie them up and stick them in their room, and then I get to watch it by myself, you know?
Yeah, I'm not much of a movie goer. My wife loves to go to the movies, but I always look at it as I'm paying to take a nap. Because I cannot stay awake for the life of me in the movie.
Really? Even if it's a good movie?
Yeah, I mean, I've stayed awake for a few, even when it's something I'm really into, man, it's just the lights being off like that and a comfy seat, man, I just can't stay awake.
You need to get more sleep, I think.
I think you're right. I don't sleep much, but that's because I have little kids, so I cherish the moments that are bad.
Now, for my birthday party this year, one of the things we did was we – in Oklahoma, we have – actually, it's the Warren Theater. It is the largest – THX certified theater in the country. And they have giant, and of course it's all digital projection. It's a really, really nice theater, but they have these rooms off to the side called director's rooms. And it's a smaller screen and it only has 24 seats in it. It has four rows of six seats. And you go in there and they have a call button. So before, you know, the lights go out, they have waitresses that'll come and they bring you a menu and you can order a drink and a meal or whatever. And then, you know, if you want another drink or something, you hit the call button and they come out. It's very discreet. They don't really bother anybody else or whatever, but and that is a fantastic way to go see a new film, you know, because you're with other people that have spent a lot of money. You know what I mean? So you're not going to have these kids running around. I mean, now obviously that's the bad part is, the last few years for Christmas, we get a gift certificate that's about $75. And I mean, that's one trip there. I mean, that includes the tickets and a meal and whatever, you know, so it's an expensive way to go. But if there's something new that you want to go see, it's kind of a fun thing.
That sounds like a good way to watch a movie. I never watched one like that.
They just redid one of the theaters here where they put, actual the seats are recliners.
Mm-hmm. That's how this is. It's all motor. This is what's bad too. Is I was on the back row, so we went and saw Elysium. Is that the Matt Damon one with the kind of futuristic? He's born, but he's in the future, right? And so I had this recliner and I have it leaned all the way back and my feet are out. And then here comes the waitress. And then I hit the button. I'm like, and I have to get my feet back down so she can go by. And then she goes down. And then up. So that's really all I did was that's how I spent my money. I just played with the recliner the whole time.
Was it all electric?
Yeah. Yeah. It's all motorized. Wow. And then there's seat warmers, which this has got to be a woman thing. I don't understand this. My wife, that was one of the first things she asked in her new car is, does it have seat warmers? She turns the seat warmers on all the time. So we go to this theater and she's like, oh, they have seat warmers. I don't know if you guys get the news there where you're at. It's been like 100 degrees every day. Like I'm not looking for seat warmers, you know? She goes right in the theater. She's like, oh, it's so chilly in here. Then on comes the seat warmer, you know? So I don't get it, you know, but yeah, it's all very, very nice. Very nice place.
So when she gets in the car, does she turn the air on and then the heat warmers to make it comfortable?
You know, so here's the most annoying thing in the world is that I don't understand this, that I don't think we needed this technology of split comfort zones in the car. So our car has, you can set the air conditioner, the temperature different on each side of the car. And you can also set the seat warmers on either side, right? So no matter where she sits, she has made it complete, like the way I wouldn't sit. You know what I mean? So she's got the seat warmer like cranked on high in the middle of summer and the air turned and it's blown or whatever. But then she gets out and she doesn't reset any of that stuff. So then the next time if she's driving and I'm in the passenger, I inherit all her crappy settings. So I've got to, change the mirrors. I've got to change where the seat is. I got to turn off that.
There's no way to set a preset or anything and just click it when she goes in?
I don't think so. I don't know. I don't think we bought that level. I think we got the medium level. That's it's crazy. Annoying because it's like every time you get in the car, you got to turn off the seat here, whatever she's done. It's very annoying.
I thought you meant on each side of the car, like the passenger could have
you
a different
can,
climate
yes.
than the driver.
That's yeah, it's crazy. Each have your own temperature thing. Like, right. And like there's a magic force field in between you, you know, that it's 80 over here right. and 60 over here.
You're
right.
Like 2 feet away from each other.
And this is what the other thing that bothers me is, boy, are we taking this off on a tangent tonight? But like, I'll set the temperature in the car for like 70. Like, you know, when you were a kid and you went in a car with your dad, the temperature was whatever your dad wanted. You know, I mean, he turned it, if we were having windows down, if he wanted the windows down, we put the windows down. If he wanted the air on in the middle of winter or whatever, that we had to deal with it, you know? So I'll set it like whatever I think as a conscious father, whatever I think that everybody will enjoy. I'll put the temperature on 70, everything, right? Then my wife bumps hers up to 71. It's just annoying, you know? Like, this is a technology I don't think we need. It just bothers me.
Yeah, well, you know, we kind of go through the same thing, and you're right, we're kind of going off. But you know what? I think we kind of covered Caddyshack. It was a funny movie, had good parts in it. But yeah, my wife and I have this. We don't have separate climates, but the way that our van is set up, that where the floor heat is directly on the driver's feet, because you're the one that's going to be driving it mainly most of the time. And the way that the passenger floor heating vent is set up, it's kind of set back, and so we'll be driving somewhere and she'll just crank it. I'm like, my feet are like swollen and hot, you know, so I'm turning it down, and we just constantly have and it's not like, let's say there's six different fan modes, it's not like, oh, we'll put it on two or three, it's just from 0 to 6.
Yep.
And I'm like, come on, man. I can't drive like that. I can't do it. So I can understand.
Harsh. Yeah, I'm not married. I don't have a shared climate in my car.
I mean, you're not lucky that you're not married. That came out wrong. My wife cannot listen to the Caddyshack episode now. But no, just the being in control of the car, of everything in the car. You know, I mean, there are times in the winter where I want the windows down. You know, I haven't had a window down with my kids in the car. And like probably since they were born, You roll it down there like, it's too windy. My dad really? Didn't put up that crap.
Oh, no. I would sit in the back seat. My dad would have the window, you know, down three quarters of the way, smoking, flicking a cigarette, and half those red ashes would be flying back in my eyes.
Right.
Trying to dodge it.
See, when we were, my dad did the same thing. He'd have the window down in the winter so he could smoke, and then he had the heater on his feet up front so he would stay warm. But when you're in the back, you're just freezing, you know? Plus, you got wind and occasionally ashes blowing in your face. I think we definitely had it rougher. We didn't have the split climate control.
Yeah.
Well, and there was no iPods or anything to, you know, distract you from dodging these. You had to keep your eyes peeled for what was coming flying at you back there, because it would just be like a wind tunnel back there.
Yeah. And my seats, you know, in Philly, they were like, we weren't the richest family, so we had like basically vinyl seats most of the time, and it was like cold ass vinyl seats in the middle of winter. And we would tell my dad, put on the hot heat, because we wanted it hot. And he would get so mad because he's like, don't call it that. Heat is hot. We're like, no, don't put on the cold heat. Like we were trying to basically say, don't put on the air conditioner, right. Put on the heat. And we would always call it hot heat. And he would get so pissed off at us. We didn't even do it on purpose. We were little kids. But we wanted the hot heat.
Yeah, see, we're the ones that should have, well, not you anymore, Steve, but growing up, like with the heat warmers, I would love to have heat warmers in my car. Because yeah, up here in Buffalo, man, there's times I get in the car and it's like sitting, you know, you could kind of drop in your seat and it's a little squishy or whatever. Man, they're frozen solid up here. Frozen solid. We could use the heat warmers.
It's not right, a good way to live.
So what, you know, my wife does is, like I said, she'll set the heat, and it's got like a low and a high, you know, so she'll put it on high on her side, and then we'll get out and forget about it. And then like on the way home from work, if she drives home, I'll be in the car and all of a sudden I'm like, whew, I'm getting a little, like I'm having hot flashes. So I'm like, what's going on in here? And then I'll realize, you know, that she's left the seat warmer on. I'm like, my thighs are burning.
Thighs are burning.
I'm like, what's going on in here, you know? And now she's on her side screwing up the settings for the next time I drive. So,
well, speaking of cars, how about that Al's car, huh? That red convertible?
Oh, yeah. What?
Driving British style, too.
Yeah. Was that?
I don't even. It's probably some kind of convertible Cadillac, I would imagine, all souped up with the horn.
That's right. What was that horn? Was it?
Was it like the horse?
Yeah, like we're in the money or something like that. Or
Yeah.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Wait, what about the Kenny Loggins soundtrack? What did you guys think about that?
You know, this is the earliest Kenny Loggins stuff I remember. And so I did look up, and, you know, I guess he was in a group for a while, but he went solo in 77 and this came out in 80. So this was like, I mean, his first kind of big thing. And then remember he was on like every soundtrack for a while in the 80s. I mean, he was on Footloose. He's on Top Gun.
Yeah, when was Footloose?
I have to look it up. 82?
He did Top Gun.
Yeah, I didn't know that. Highway to
Danger
the Zone.
He did.
That was him. I didn't know that was him.
Yeah.
Gosh, yeah, I didn't know.
We'll never review that movie either.
I'm coming back for episode 100, man.
And
I'm coming
he did.
Back.
He came back recently, and I heard this on one of my kids' DVDs. He did a theme for like the Winnie the Pooh, like a new one, and it's called House at Pooh Corner, which I thought was hilarious. He sings a whole song about living at Pooh Corner, which I wish I weren't 12 and thought that was funny, but I do.
That is what, you know, kind of washed out actors and musicians do.
They get drawn into the Disney world, yep.
They do. Like Ice Cube.
Oh, I'm sure they're making a boatload that way, too, in the Disney direction.
Right.
Probably.
They're all living in Pooh Corner.
I would move to Pooh Corner if it paid good.
Yeah, I'm slinging tires, and they're in Pooh Corner making Pooko Bucks. Pooh Corner. Oh, yeah. And he had, like, top billing on the intro of that movie, too. Kenny Loggins.
What, Caddyshack?
Yeah, and Caddyshack.
Yeah.
Oh.
It did seem like the kind of movie that made
it. On the soundtrack, there are 10 songs, and 4 of them are Kenny Loggins songs. I'm All Right was obviously the big hit for him. Yeah. I looked for other marketing things. You know, I always look on eBay for other things related to the movies or whatever. It doesn't seem like it's a very, you know, I have Caddyshack 1 and 2 on DVD, and I think I got them from like Walmart bargain bins or something, like the $5 bin. They're on eBay for $1. So it's not a very valuable or, you know, or expensive movie to own. I did find some Bushwood Country Club t-shirts on eBay. There's several different ones. There's ones that like a t-shirt that has the logo, the whole front. There's like polos, like what the guys were wearing in there. So you can find those. And for about $25, you can get your own animatronic gopher that will dance to the song I'm All Right. You press the button and he does a little dance there. So if you need that on your desk, you can get one of those.
Yeah, that's right. He does do a little boogieing at the end, doesn't he?
But this is all newer type things. I don't think there was any stuff that came out, you know, at that time.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's more kid-based movies that they would, you know, market all the stuff for. I don't know. I mean, I did like it. It'll definitely stay in my library. It's something I could watch again. I didn't dislike the fact that the storyline, like The Great Outdoors, was a little blasé, but I enjoyed it more than Great Outdoors.
I liked it too. And I would watch it again if somebody had it on. I don't know if I'd put it on myself.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I have a library of stuff that every once in a while I'll just be like, why don't I, you know, I'm doing something. Probably not going to sit and focus on the movie itself, but maybe it's a background movie or something like that.
Yeah.
Or if I'm at my in-laws for the weekend and I need to escape and laugh, I might throw my headphones and put it on the netbook.
Yeah. I'm with both you guys. I say I liked it. I didn't love it. You know, as far as a cohesive movie, you know, there wasn't a lot there, but all those little one-liners and stuff that just, you know, kept cracking me up throughout the whole thing. So I thought that was the stuff I liked. And I'm always, I don't know if you guys do this, I can never remember them. Like I'll watch a movie and I'll see these funny one-liners. And I'm like, God, I want to incorporate that into, you know, like my own speech, my vernacular, you know, like I want to say, hey, we're all going to get laid, you know, like I want to remember those things, but I always forget them, you know, but I thought this movie had a lot of little things like that, just one-liners to take away from it, you know?
I'm like you. I can never remember them either.
Yeah, I like the donut without a hole is a Danish, but I thought, where am I going to use that one? But it was funny. You just kind of threw it out there.
It's like you hang on to it, like, you know, every time you go to a donut shop, you're going to be like waiting to use that one line, you know? Just have it
who
in your
said
pocket,
that? I
your,
care.
Little, your little bag who of chocolate.
It's Chevy Chase. I think in the beginning of the movie or something. He's talking with Danny.
That's right.
Was there two Caddyshacks or was there three? I don't even know.
I think there's just two. I don't know the story behind Caddyshack 2. I wish I knew more about it. Caddyshack 2 came out in 88. So it's like 8 years later, they decided to make a sequel. So somebody somewhere needed money, I'm guessing. I don't really know why. And then they, I did read that there was a, under the trivia section, it did say that Rodney Dangerfield was sent the script to Caddyshack 2, and he sent them a message back that he had thrown it in the trash. So the only person that returned for the sequel was Chevy Chase, and Chevy Chase has gone on record to say that he wished he hadn't. So it's a pretty brutal, you know, as far as sequels go. You know,
from what I remember, it wasn't that bad. Randy Quaid was in it. He was pretty funny in it. Jackie Gleason. Yep.
Dan Aykroyd.
I've seen parts of it because I'm just looking at it on IMDb. And Jackie Mason, I remember him. He was the main,
Jackie
one
Mason.
Of the main characters, I believe, in that. I don't know. But I don't really remember it that much. But yeah, I just thought
I think it was kind of the same plot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was some other people. Sam Kinison was slotted to go into Caddyshack 2, and I guess he was good friends with Rodney Dangerfield. So when Rodney Dangerfield turned it down, then he also turned down his role. So I don't know. It doesn't seem like, I mean, of all the those types of movies, that doesn't seem like the one script you would throw in the trash. You know, I mean, it doesn't seem like it was that much worse than some of the other things that came out. But it does seem odd that it's 8 years later, like that was kicking around. You know, somebody's like, well, we better bring this back.
I agree.
Yeah, well, they tend to do that a lot now, it seems. It's just, you know, kind of run movies into the ground. How many hangovers are there?
Yeah, but they don't wait 8 years. They come out like literally 2 months later.
Well, maybe that's better then. But I'll never seek out Caddyshack 2 to watch it.
And you should. It wasn't, if I remember correctly, it was not that bad.
I don't know, man.
Did you ever see it, Sean?
I know I've seen parts of it because, like I said, he looks very familiar from the movie. I was thinking, as we were talking about, I'm thinking that guy's, I didn't know who it was, but I could see his face. So I looked it up. So I know I've seen parts of it. But like most movies back then, I mean, I think I had a problem staying awake back then as well. I mean, a lot of these movies I saw like a ton of times, but it was like in sections. It just seems to be that way for some of the movies.
Well, back then we didn't have DVR. We didn't have Netflix. We didn't have all those things. So a lot of these movies we caught when you were flipping channels, you know, either on regular TV or on cable, you know. So, you know, you'd flip over to HBO and, okay, well, here's the last 30 minutes of a movie, so you'd catch that, and then the next one would start, you know. So it was just kind of different. I think we did see, because I'm the same way. There's a lot of movies where I'll start watching a movie, and then halfway through I'm like, hey, I've seen this, you know, and that's probably what happened, is I saw half of it, you know.
Right.
Yeah, a lot of them were the HBO movies, and you'd have that really cool catalog that you'd get every month for HBO, and then you could see, oh, when is this going to be on again? Oh, I mean, I loved when those things would come in for the following month. Like, you get a week before the end of August, you'd get September's to come in, and you would just go like, what is the main? There was always a main movie that they were going to focus on for that month. And I remember having those booklets. I really wish I could get my hands on those things.
Yeah. I haven't seen them in a while. Was it like a TV Guide thing, or was it an actual HBO?
It was just it was like a TV Guide just for HBO. And it was a real thin colored, probably about the size of like a CD. Sleeve, like a CD case, kind of like that. And it would come out, and it would have every page would have a couple pictures and a calendar that day, what was playing.
I got to see one of them again. I remember.
Yeah, I'm going to search them out.
You know, when I was a kid, we got HBO for free because my dad had built some kind of antenna thing, like up on top of the house, you know? And this is pre-scrambling, you know? And so when you turn on our TV, you just went to channel 2 and we got HBO. And I remember this guy came to our house and actually got in an argument with my dad over it, telling us that we had to take it down. And my dad's like, you know, you're broadcasting it to my house. It's legal or whatever. And, so we had HBO for a long time. And then all of a sudden it changed. One morning we turned it on and it was the first day of MTV.
Wow.
So whatever that signal was, that had been HBO before, that, you know, it got changed over to, then we were MTV, and then eventually we did the satellite. Remember the big giant satellite dishes? Because we were just outside of the city, so we couldn't get cable out there for a long time, you know. So we had the giant satellite dish. So we had like HBO. You had to look up like HBO East and HBO West. And then you would like punch it in on this giant remote and the thing would turn, you know, like that. It was all motorized. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's awesome.
A big giant thing. Yeah. And so we would get a book and it would tell you, like, you had to punch in the coordinates of a satellite. And then you go to the satellite and then you would get all the channels that were on that satellite, you know. And so we would get like these, like Mexican wrestling, and it would be all in Spanish, you know, and we would watch that. The coolest thing about that was that on the satellites is where they would do the feeds to your local TV stations. So, like, they would say, like, whatever show, like, let's say you're into, I don't know, Murder, She Wrote or something like that. So on your network broadcast station or whatever, over the satellite, they would send a week's worth of shows. And then they would record it at the television station, and then they would show one each day for the whole week, you know. So if you knew when to find that feed, you could get like a whole week's worth of shows. So what we found was the feed for Jeopardy. So if you tuned into Jeopardy, you know, and you could watch all the shows that would be on next week, you know, dude. And then
so you could be real right, smart.
And then, after, yeah. And then your friends, like I remember having a slumber party and my friends came over and then, you know, Alex Trebek, you know, would be like, you know, okay, whatever this category is. And he would say, I'll take, you know, animals for $1,000. I go, pterodactyl. And I would say, this giant flying lizard. They're like, how did you know? I'm like, I'm just that good. I don't know. It's amazing. It's a miracle. But, yeah, the satellite, that was cool with all the different HBOs and Showtime. And then, of course, over the time, that's when they started all the scrambling, you know, so then after a while, you couldn't get any of that stuff for free anymore.
Scrambling. I used to have a giant remote control. It was like connected by a cable and it had like 20 buttons on it. And it had this little like fine tuner knob and you could kind of like get a scrambled channel tuned in just right, just to see enough where it would flick and then you could see and it flick. We used to do that all the time.
I think we didn't search after, it might have been an Android App Addicts for that exact remote. We were looking at, we were all doing Google search. Is this it? No, that's not it.
It wasn't it.
We so it was found a, the right a TV, one. A TV remote.
It was a big box, like the size of a little smaller than a shoebox. It felt yes, a TV remote, and it had like buttons, like hard. You press the buttons and they would snap down.
Oh, okay.
And there was
okay.
like three tiers you could do over these buttons. And there was like 20 buttons across. It felt like, and you get all these channels on them, and it came with a little paper thing you put over the buttons to see what channel you were pressing.
Okay.
And it was called a cable box. That's what we called it. Yeah, I think that's. Channel changer. Yeah. I can't remember what you even called it.
I think the first remote we had was connected by a wire, and all it did was it was to the VCR, and it was just a switch up or down, and it was play and pause. That was the only two things it did. And so
I remember
you know, you would watch a movie, and then you'd pause, you know, and you'd go to the fridge or whatever. And I remember Shogun. Remember they had the mini series of Shogun and it was like, they showed it for like a week or whatever. And it was a couple of hours and my dad worked nights. So he paid me like $5 to watch this thing, which was, you know, 10 hours. I mean, it was 2 hours a night all week. And my job was to sit there and then I'd had to pause it when the commercials would come on. So he would record it, but he would make me take out all the commercials with that thing. So easy $5. That's what I say for 10 hours worth of work.
Damn, man.
It's funny. Our kids, man, they have no idea how it was back then, man. And I'm constantly yelling at them, like, stop taping SpongeBob and this and that because you're filling up my DVR with all this crap, man. They just will set every show. We got to go to the store. Okay. I'm going to send it to tape. My DVR is like 80% full. So I got to go in there and then start to leave. And then I get yelled at, well, where's SpongeBob? I'm like, you see, watch SpongeBob all the time. It's the same stuff. And it's on Netflix.
Yeah. I built several years ago, I built a PC-based DVR or PVR, you know. And one of the things it did was it noted whenever the commercials were. So it would do little markers. And so when you watch the programs back, it would automatically jump over where the commercials were, you know. So we ran it for a while, and actually what happened is we upgraded to digital cable, and it's not able to switch channels with the digital cable or whatever, so we just kind of quit using it. So we went to the digital cable, and the first time my kids watched a TV program that had commercials in it, you would have thought that they had just witnessed like a murder. I mean, like the most horrendous. They were like, Dad! Skip the commercials, you know. I'm like, no, this is how TV is. They have these. No, you got to skip. You know, it was like it had blown their minds, literally, that they had just never been exposed to that. You know, things like fast forward and rewind. They just had no concept of waiting, you know, to rewind something or whatever. They just, I don't know. It feels like weird. Like the stories that our parents have of roughing it are things like. Or even my wife's grandparents, my wife's grandma, before she passed away, was telling this long story how she literally picked cotton. Like for 10 years, that was her job, just picking cotton. So their stories of roughing it are different than ours, which is we had to put up with rewind or we had a giant cable box remote with 20 buttons that had a cable on it. You know, like that's our roughing it stories.
You had to
our
spin
kids.
The tracking dial on your VCR manually.
Oh, tracking. Yeah. I'd rather pick cotton than watch some commercials, to be honest. I
all right, I'll give you that.
I think commercials are, to me, it's kind of crazy. Like, that you could literally sit somebody in front of ads for 3 minutes and have them watch them straight. Like, I couldn't do it anymore. I kind of stopped watching TV in the last year or so, but that concept to me now, that like I used to do that, is crazy. I mean, and the ads, the companies, the TV stations, they would push that to the limit. They would put as many commercials in before you said, forget this, and I'm doing something else. They would take it to that limit every time. I hated the number of commercials.
There's a few programs that we download just so we'll have them all, you know, on the hard drive or whatever, because we stream it to all the TVs. Like Ridiculousness is one. The kids like that because they like any show or somebody gets kicked in a crotch for half an hour or whatever. But when you download it, it's a 30-minute show, and when you download them, they're 22 minutes long. So it's a 22 minutes of show and 8 minutes of commercials, you know? And so then when a new one comes on and the kids will watch it on TV, you're just reminded of how many commercial breaks are in everything, right.
You know how they say, like, you know, you start off you're born, and then as you get older, you start to kind of regress in that way. My parents are doing that with TV now because, you know, one of our guilty pleasures, my wife and I would like to watch Survivor, and so does my mother and my stepfather. And you can't talk to them about it because they'll be like, oh no, we're not starting it till, you know, it's over. Then we'll watch it. And I'm like, well why? Well, that way we can skip through the commercials. And I'm like, all right, I get that you want to skip through the commercials, but you could have been, I just don't get it. I'm like, what? You're going to watch it then. I can see, okay, you can't watch it because you're going to bed and you'll watch it the next day.
So they won't watch it live.
Watch it live. They'll,
I don't blame them for that. It's
they'll wait
crazy.
An hour just so they can skip through the commercials. I don't know. It's like, they're like my kids. Same way. They can't deal with the commercials. I'm just like, all right, that's when I get up and get some pretzels or go take a leak or something. But I don't watch it. I mean, yeah, other than that, there's only a very few shows that my wife and I actually watch together. To mostly everything else is from the DVR or borrowed from the internet without commercials.
Yeah, the only thing I'm watching live right now is Breaking Bad. We got three episodes left, and it's Sunday night at 8 o'clock, which is a horrible time to put a drama about a guy that cooks meth, because I mean, Sunday at 8 is like, that's the final check-in with the kids. You know what I mean? Like, is the homework done? Do we have clothes for tomorrow? And I'm like, oh, you know, so I have to go in the other room. I'm like, don't come in here. Daddy's watching Breaking Bad.
All right, gentlemen, we've gone on way long enough. It's not about Caddyshack, but I don't know. I had fun anyways. It was a good time.
Yeah, me too.
We took it a long way around, didn't we?
Well, we'll see what the magic of editing can do, but if I remember to take everything out, we'll see if I do that this week too. But Steve, I'm glad you came. Thanks for coming and hanging out, man.
Oh yeah, man.
Thanks for asking me. It was fun.
Yeah, anytime. Let's go around. So Steve, why don't you tell everybody where they can find you? Anything you want to plug or anything like that?
Yeah, you know, we'll check out our other podcast at Android App Addicts. Even if you don't have an Android phone, we have a good time there. And you know, Sean's one of the other co-hosts. And maybe when Rob gets off of his Apple phone, maybe he can come on for a guest spot. But you can find our show there. And then I do website design, graphic design. I'm a musician. Just go to stevecherubino.com, and you'll see basically everything I do there. And let me know if I could be of service to you. I'm here to service you. That's what I do.
Steve is a jack of all trades, and that sounded great. And Rob, can you get it together, buddy? How about you?
I'm not going to touch that one.
Oh, man.
You can find me not servicing people over at you can find me over at RobOhara.com. And you can find the You Don't Know Flack podcast when I get around to – I just recorded one yesterday after a 2-week break. Over at podcast.robohara.com. And I was going to ask you this. Now, Dore, I know he's not here with us this week, but doesn't he do a Linux-based podcast? I just bought a Raspberry Pi, and so I'm all into, I just got Linux installed on it. I don't know how to do anything on it, though. So So doesn't he have, what is it, Linux?
Linux for the rest of us. Yeah, if you go to podnuts.com. I know I always ask him, and all he ever says is, you want to find out anything, podnuts.com. But yeah, he should definitely plug that. That's his Linux show. Dore is the Linux guru. I mean, he knows everything Linux. He's actually really not here as he's going through the Ohio Linux Fest, and he's got a couple talks that he's going to be doing there. So yeah, Linux for the rest of us. Go to podnuts.com. You'll find all the shows.
And that's where you can find Android App Addicts too. I forgot to mention that. It's at podnuts.com. Yep.
All good stuff there. Dore's got a lot of stuff going on there, and it's good. Facebook page. If you haven't, come on over and like the Facebook page. I think I said it was facebook.com/throwbackreviewspodcast, but I don't think it is the exact address. I think there's some different numbers and stuff. I don't know Facebook, man. I'm so like out of the Facebook loop. I don't get it. So I'm kind of letting Rob plug that one. But if you go to throwbackreviews.com, there's links for that actual Facebook account. There's a link for our Twitter account at Throwback Review. And that's about it. That's all I got. Just think this one is done. This is in the can. Go there, Facebook, Twitter. We will announce what the next show is going to be. We're always messing things up, so we don't want to announce it anymore because we're not always sure, and it always changes. So if you go there, facebook.com, and check us out there, we'll be telling you this week what the next episode will be. So until then, thanks for listening.